Welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 and The General 95.9 and 1580 WAMW. I'm Dave Crooks. Each week we shine a spotlight on topics important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Financial Bank with locations in Washington and all across the Wabash Valley. Today my special guest is Washington Mayor Joe Wellman. A couple of topics have gained a lot of attention this week in our community. The city is asking their largest customer, Davies Rural Water, to pay a 57% increase for wholesale water. Plus, the Common Council is a step closer to allowing owners of golf carts the privilege to drive on city streets. So the best person to talk about this is our own mayor, Joe Wellman. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
So I've been kind of following this closely this week. We not only had a report from your most recent meeting, but I also read what was in the Times Herald this week. Help our listeners and the people in the community understand why the city is taking this big, bold step when it comes to a rate increase with our biggest wholesale buyer of city water.
Well, the reason is about a year and a half or so ago, maybe even two years ago, Rural Water came to us and asked for a new contract because they were expanding their system and they wanted a new contract so we could supply them more water. So, you know, anytime you're going to sell more product, you want to make sure you're not losing money on it. So we engaged the services of Umbaugh & Associates, who is a well-respected. They do this all across the state for both city water utilities as well as they represent rural waters to do a cost, what's called a cost to service study, which is even more entailed than just a rate study. They look at what it costs to provide product, water, to various classes and types of customers. And they came back and said, you know, it costs you more to supply water than you're charging to rural water. So we went back to Rural Water and said, "Sure, we'll work with you and work up a new contract, but we've had a cost of service study done, and we're going to have to increase your rate." And so then we've been negotiating with them ever since.
So is the study basically saying that the water was underpriced to begin with?
Yes, they pay an average. If you're familiar with our rates, we have a tiered rate depending on how much water you use. The in-city customers. The lowest rate, I think, is about $5 per 100 cubic feet of water, and it goes down from there, down to, I think, $1.36 or something like that. And Rural Water's paying an average about of $1.41, and determined that they are a big customer. They buy a lot of our water, but the in-city residents were basically subsidizing that rate because we weren't covering our cost on what we were selling to out of city customers, primarily Rural Water.
I kind of think that the example that you're dealing with is a lot like electricity rates. I mean, I've had friends of mine that complain that they live in the rural area and their electric rate per kilowatt hour is so much higher than the city, and then I have to gently remind them, well, yes, but when you only have one or two houses every 1 or 2 miles of power lines, it's a lot more costly to deliver electricity to people in rural areas versus 10 customers on a city block, for instance.
Yes, that's part of it. And so if you use the same rates for everybody, the people in the city basically, as I say, are subsidizing the rural water customers, and we don't think that's fair. And so we went back to Rural Water and said, okay, here's the rate that our cost of service study shows. Well, I mean, it is a big increase for them. I don't argue with that. But that is what the cost of serving them is. So our council, we've had lots of discussions on this and decided that we need to do a rate increase for them.
Now, could someone argue that perhaps even the city customers maybe are not paying what it's really costing to supply them with water, and maybe those rates should be reevaluated too or not?
No, the cost of service study said that the in-city customers are good. I mean, what we're charging them is a fair price, and we're covering our costs. You know, part of it is covering your operating costs. The other part is looking to the future. And, you know, we want to have the ability to provide all the water and all the clean water that anybody needs. And that means occasionally you have to upgrade your system. And we certainly don't want to get to the point that places like Flint, Michigan have had where, you have bad water. And so their study includes, you know, the primarily operating costs, but also, you know, what we need to do to continue providing good water.
So how much, if you took like a percentage, like 100% of Washington's water system, what percent would you guesstimate that Davies Rural Water currently buys from us?
They buy about 23%.
Okay, that's a lot of water.
They are a good customer.
And when you mentioned that they're wanting more, what percent more are they wanting to buy?
Well, our contract says, and this is an old contract signed back in the 90s, but we've been supplying them water since the 70s, as far back as our records go anyway. We currently have 3 connection points that we connect to them. Their original request was to add 2 more connection points. And our contract says that the city will supply up to, it's about 30 million gallon a month, about 1 million gallons a day.
And then how much more do they think they might use, I guess?
Well, I think that's an estimate, too. They were probably looking at least a 10 or probably 15% increase.
Okay. And again, is this a combination of they're trying to actually give more residential customers water service, or is there perhaps some industry looking to locate, or both?
Probably both. I think at this point, they're just looking at making sure they've got large enough lines and enough storage capacity to supply their growth out in the county, too. I mean, you know, the county population, just like the cities, has grown. I think our county population's about 32,000 now. And they supply a lot of Davis County as well as parts of Martin County, and I think maybe they even go up to Greene County a little bit.
They do, okay.
So don't hold me to that, but I know they've got a pretty good swath of an area that they cover. So, you know, they're just looking at growth and their future capacity also.
And, of course, as they grow, then that cost gets passed along, too, to the customers.
Right.
So it's more than a water cost for them, too, I guess.
Well, probably. And, you know, the more we have capacity, but the more we run the pumps and the more we have to clean the filters and the more water we run through the system, the costs go up. So, you know, you got to clean the filters more often. You got to back flush the system more often. Just more and more costs, the more water you produce.
By the way, I've seen some social media comments and some people that have been, you know, just critical of this, you know, the people out in the rural area making comments like, you know, they're getting taxed without any kind of representation. How do you respond to that, I guess?
Well, first of all, it's not a tax. You know, it's a commercial product that we're selling. You know, it's like any other business that's selling a product. Do you call that taxation? I don't know.
You call it a user fee, I guess.
Yeah,
too,
I mean, we're selling a product and they're buying it. So, you know, over the years, we have added customers outside the city limits to both our, really everything, electric, water, and sewer. Interestingly, I was at a meeting earlier this week. There are cities that are starting to take the stance that if we're not providing you water now outside the limits, we're not going to, because of issues like this or issues, you know, that restrict annexation, restrict the city's growth in the future. And so it's a hot topic right now. But the 14.3% increase that will be for those outside city customers, I got to tell you, I was at a mayor's meeting, and there are cities that charge as much as 50% more for customers outside the city limits. So, you know, it again gets back to when people turn the faucet, they want to make sure they got plenty of clean water. And we just have to make sure our system stays up with the times.
And as we look toward the future, and from what you've been able to learn in this position, how are we for the future? Do we have plenty of supply when it comes to water? And how are the well conditions and things like that?
We have plenty of water right now. And we have, with the new water tower that we built 4 years ago on the east side, we have plenty of storage capacity right now. We will be in the next phase of our water improvement, probably in the next couple of years, we will be starting a hydrology study to see where our next well fields need to go. We have plenty of water now, particularly out of our north field, to supply, you know, for the immediate future. But, you know, we're going to have to grow, too, as the community grows and as we get more development.
As the new water tower was put up recently, what does that hold?
That's 600,000 gallons.
It's a lot of water.
Yes. We have enough capacity now to hold about pretty close to 2 days' worth of water. If everything went to, you know, if everything was full and we couldn't pump a drop for a while, we'd have enough water for 2 days. And as I've learned in this job, you know, it's like any new job, you learn a lot of stuff you never thought you needed to know in your lifetime.
Right.
You really don't want to hold more than 2 days of water. IDEM doesn't like that because, well, the chlorine that's in it and the fluoride starts to evaporate and the water loses quality. So we're in good shape with storage capacity now that we've got that fourth water tower.
And I know you and many other officials locally looking to the future for some industrial development. If a big customer came to town and needed a pretty big chunk of our system, you feel good that we can deliver,
I guess. Yes.
Okay. All right. Anything else regarding this proposed water increase for Davies Rural Water that you'd like to share with the community at this point?
Well, it's just I mean the council and myself both are looking – just want to look and make sure the system remains financially and structurally viable. And unfortunately, things cost more every year, just like in your personal life. And so we just want to make sure that each customer, each class of customer, each type of customer is paying their fair share, and that we're not asking our city residents to subsidize others.
And if you were comparing our city water rates versus other communities around the state, how do we stack up?
We stack up very well.
So on the low end, you're saying?
In the middle range, I would say.
Okay.
Particularly in the immediate close proximity around here, we're in the middle. You know, you go to Indianapolis or some of the larger cities, it's quite a bit higher.
And some of those are investor-owned type situations. So that,
yeah. I mean, that's the other advantage that people need to remember. The city owns the water system, so, you know, we don't need to make a 25% or 40% return on that like you might if you were an investor-owned utility.
Taking the profit out is good for taxpayers.
Yes, and good for rural customers and all of our customers.
Yep. Let's move on to another timely topic right now, and it looks like we're pretty close to allowing the city of Washington residents who own golf carts the opportunity, if they're equipped properly, to drive those golf carts on city streets. Can you explain the whole proposal and what it's going to be all about?
Sure. Most people don't realize that there is a state statute that makes golf carts on public streets and roads and highways illegal, unless a community has an ordinance that makes them legal. And so they give us that home rule, one of the few home rule things they've not tried to restrict.
I was there, by the way. I remember this debate.
Anyways, so we have that capability. We've had some requests to take a look at it. And the city did look at it. The prior administration did look at it at that point. And basically prepared an ordinance, but nothing was ever done with it. So we've looked at it again, and we, Mike Singleton, our city councilman, jumped right on that and said, you know, Mayor, I'd be glad to head up a committee to look at that. So we had a committee of myself, a couple councilmen, our police chief, a citizen at large, and looked at six or seven other communities' ordinances, including Vincennes and Huntingburg in our area, and see how they did it. And we looked at that. We worked with Tim Dant, the city attorney, to draw up an ordinance then that we think is going to be very, very viable and workable.
So basically, if this ordinance passes, if you have a golf cart, first of all, you could never drive it on National Highway or 57, right?
Right. 57, 257, and 50.
So state highways, not allowed on state highways.
Correct.
But you could cross it, right?
You can cross it at, you know, perpendicular, 90 degree. Now, we are, in the interest of, you know, clarity and everything, we are going to restrict it that you can't take it across Business 50 at Meridian Street and 11th Street.
Okay.
And then Highland Avenue out there, you know, by the Moose, and because that's too busy to try to get a golf cart. But any place else, you can cross the highway. But, yeah, you can't go up and down state highway.
Okay. And these particular golf carts would not only have to have lights, but make sure they understand some of the particulars they would have to equip them with.
Yes. Basically, have to be equipped a lot like an automobile, and they have to have insurance just like an automobile would. You know, same liability and property damage and bodily injury insurance. They'll have to have headlights, taillights, brake lights. We're going to require that you put an orange or red flag on it so they're nice and visible. And just as importantly, you have to have a valid driver's license. That's some of the people that expressed concern about it. That was the thing. Well, okay, somebody loses their license for drunk driving, they'll go buy a golf cart. No, you still have to have a valid driver's license. So we're going to try to make it as safe as possible. We're going to require seat belts on there, which, and that's not so much to
really?
In case of an accident, but kids falling off. Because we've had cases in the county. I mean, I think Boggs has had two incidents where kids fell off of golf carts and got injured. And it wasn't that they hit something. They just turned too quick or kids, you know, rolled off of it. So,
but would the adults be exempt from the seat belts?
No.
Oh, come on.
No. And that's as much a state requirement as it is our own.
Okay.
Pretty much they require, well, basically we pass this ordinance by state code, state law, that's considered a motor vehicle.
Okay.
And they have to
So it's
got to
reflect the state language then.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because I know we caught a ton of heck when we passed the seatbelt law to begin with, but of course we had Uncle Sam saying, if you don't, you're not going to get this, and this, and it was
right.
all money. You
right.
know? So,
right.
Oh, well.
So I think it'll be a good thing. I don't see – I talked to the mayor of Vincennes, and I said, have you had any problems? And he said, no, we've not had any real problems with it. You know, people have to abide by the same. You got to stop at stop signs. They got to stay under the speed limit because, whether you know it or not, there are some souped-up golf carts that'll go 40 miles an hour.
I've seen them out at Boggs. They're pretty aggressive at times. But next reading of this ordinance would be your next meeting, take it?
Yes, we'll have a public hearing. The one thing that Mike and his committee did was we had a couple of informal public input sessions, I guess I'll call them. They weren't official hearings, and as you know, many ordinances, before we pass them, have to have an official public hearing. So prior to the next meeting, we will have a public hearing. People can come and give their final comments, yes or aye, or, you know, for or against. And then then the council will vote on it.
So if it survives second reading, it becomes a new ordinance, right?
Right.
Okay. Got about a minute left, Mayor. Business 50. I know that
always a topic.
You and past administrations have been beaten on the state, and they deserve to be beat on for this. We don't control Business 50, National Highway. It's the state's property.
Right. And they won't even let us plow the snow on it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
So what can we do to fix this horrible-looking road?
Well, I'm about the fourth mayor, I think, that told the state,
you
fix it up, and we'll be glad to talk about taking it over, because they definitely want us to take it over since they've built the bypass.
Right.
And we're not opposed to that, but we don't want to take it over in the condition it's in. So I and the council have hired a couple of firms, everything from an architectural design firm to utility engineers, to take a look at it, give us ideas on what it could be, what it could look like, and give us a cost estimate, not just to pave the thing and you know, make it look pretty for 3 or 4 years, but to actually rebuild it. Put in new, you know, replace the utilities that are under it that are probably 80 years old, sidewalks, curbs, street lights, and then we can decide, you know, okay, here's the maximum, here's what we maybe want to scale it down to or whatever. Part of that process eventually will include input sessions from, I'm hope, like some of the businesses along there. And obviously the residents of the community.
You definitely want to do it right, though, if you're going to
get,
if you're going to take this thing over.
Regardless of whether it's a state property or city property, it is still a major thoroughfare for our residents. And that's why I and the council are very interested in looking at it. And, you know, when we took office, the big thing was cleaning up properties. And we've been working very hard on that for 5 years now. And this is the next big project that we need to take a look at.
And how can people help with this effort?
Well, as we get down the road a little farther, in fact, I've got a meeting in the next day or two here with one of the engineering firms to give me an update on it. The next step will be to have some input sessions from the public. So as we advertise those, we'd love to have the public come in and tell us what they think it ought to look like.
And low to high estimates to fix it right, the price range is what?
It's going to be in the $20 million area.
Wow. Okay.
That's a lot of money.
Well,
and, of course, the city doesn't have $20 million. Obviously, we'll probably have to put some money into the pot, but we really want to work with the state, not against them, and hopefully NDOT can put up a good chunk of that money.
Well, we'll see when the new administration takes office if we can put a little heat on them.
Okay.
And I may have more pull with one, and you may have more pull with the other.
We'll see what we can get done between us.
But either way, let's just get the $20 million, okay?
Yeah, we'll work on that.
Well, Mayor, thanks for your time again today.
Thank you.
Busy things happening in the city of Washington, and we wish you the best.
Thank you, Dave.
Have a great weekend.
Appreciate all your support and involvement in the community.
Glad to do it. Focus on the Community has been brought to you by First Financial Bank, with locations in Washington and across the Wabash Valley. You can grab a rebroadcast of today's program and past shows when you visit our website, WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Dave Crooks, inviting you to tune in every Saturday morning at 8:30 on either Memories 107.9 or The General 95.9 and 1580 WAMW as we focus on the community.